Also, a question about the forest spirits. Are they cute?
I think they're cute because of the butt cheeks.
Just the butt cheeks are cute.
If the butt cheeks were not there, I'd be like, eh, they're fine.
My prince, are you prepared to learn what fate the stones have foretold you?
Yes.
There is evil at work in the land to the west, Prince Ashitaka.
My name is Ashitaka. I've traveled far from lands to the east.
Go away.
I don't want to fight you. I'm a friend.
Princess Mononoke?
Princess of the spirits of ghouls, beasts, and ancient gods. The wolf stole her soul and now she lives to kill me.
You're beautiful.
Why can't the humans in the forest live together? Why can't we stop this fighting now?
I'm going to show you how to kill a god.
You cannot alter your fate, my prince.
Ashitaka, son!
However, you can rise to meet it if you choose.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Show Me the Movies with Justin and Nick. A movie podcast hosted by lifelong cousins slash buddies that digs in movies that mean something to us and our guests. I am Justin.
I'm Nick. And we have a guest with us today.
A great guest.
Hi, I'm Victoria.
Awesome. We have Victoria Oaks. And what movie are we talking about?
We're talking about Princess Mononoke.
Which I am so excited
I'm glad
for.
I was pronouncing that word right in my head the whole time. Mononoke. I was like, yes. I think that sounds right, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, yes. A Studio Ghibli movie.
Yes, not Ghibli, which I always want to say.
I do too.
Ghibli. You just got to think about giblets in that.
That's actually how I remember that.
That makes me think of Gibby for my Carly. Any iCarly fans here?
Amazing. So, yeah, we're talking about Princess Mononoke by Hayao Miyazaki, right? Directed. Do you guys watch subbed or dubbed?
I watch dubbed.
Okay.
I watch dubbed.
I watch dubbed. I watch subbed always if it's live action. But if it's animated, I usually do dubbed.
Wait, what did you say, Victoria? Did you just say subbed?
I watch dubbed.
Dubbed. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
When we watch anime, I'm a subbed girly person.
Okay.
But I feel like with the Studio Ghibli casts, the English casts are like, I've heard that they're trained to have a very conversational style, which I really, really like. Like, I feel like they don't overact. It feels very organic to me, so I actually really enjoy it.
Yeah. Absolutely. It also... I think when you're watching, especially because Miyazaki has a lot of creative control, it's a decent dub. At least it's not like really, really bad. Whereas like certain times, like there's actually a movie I watched called City on Fire that is a Hong Kong movie. And the version that I got was only available dubbed. And I watched it and I was like, it was a really good movie, but it was really taken away from my enjoyment because it was just all of these.
The only time
all these actors and all of these like weird voices that did not fit at all. It was bad.
The only time I didn't like, I actually kind of forgot that it was dubbed until after the movie. I was like, they showed all of the American actors, and I was like, oh yeah, this is dubbed. And then I was thinking about it, and I was like, Jacobo sometimes when he was talking, it felt like he like had no breaths. Like he was just like, I don't know, like just like kept talking on and on. And I don't know if that was purposeful or if it was like the translation was weird or like just like how his mouth was moving. He had to just like keep going and go.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how that works, but that stood out to me.
For sure. We always do a little bit of a plot synopsis. We assume that people have seen the movie if they are listening to it. But I'll say what I have written down, and you guys can add anything you want. So I have, in 14th century Japan, Prince Ashitaka leaves his village to lift a curse he received from a demonic boar. Along the way, he finds friends, foes, and a girl raised by wolves as he searches for a way to cleanse his sickness. Anything to add?
Is that original, Nick? Did you write that?
It was.
It's a Nick original right there, certified.
I really dig that,
yeah.
It's a pretty great
nothing to add.
Box office. So, released in July of 1997 in Japan, released in September of 1999 in the United States, and we'll get into in the fun facts just some things about the Japan to U.S. piece. The budget was around $16.6 million. Worldwide gross, have any guesses? I always like making people guess. Victoria, you have any guesses?
Oh, I have like no concept of that.
I know. It's always hard. I have a little bit more.
$5. Yeah. Okay, that's a good starting place.
That's $5. A great place to start.
Victoria's like, I bet it's more than $5, I think.
I have slightly more because I make people guess now. So now I'm like, okay, I think I understand a little bit more how much movies make, but I'm still blown away.
I have no ballpark.
I'll say $100 million.
That's a good guess. Worldwide gross, $177.6 million.
Oh, see, so, I totally would have guessed that, but you know, inflation is really hard yeah, to calculate.
It's so hard. Yeah, the backwards
totally.
Math, everything. It's tough.
The conversion to U.S. dollars, yeah. All that. Yeah. So to start, when, where, how many times did you see this movie? We'll start with you, Victoria.
Yeah, so I had to scroll back down the old Letterboxd list to go find what year I first saw it. So it was 2022. Brady and I were going through several of the Studio Ghibli movies because we had just gotten HBO Max, and that was the first time in my lifetime where I had, like, streaming access to these movies. I was familiar with them growing up, but just, like, didn't really have a chance or, like, an outlet to go see them. So I was like, okay, everybody my whole life has been telling me that I in particular would enjoy these movies. So we just, like, we went through Porco Rosso, we went through Howl's Moving Castle, and, oh, there was one other. I think it was Spirited Away was the other one we watched before this one. And I'm actually kind of glad that I didn't see it earlier in life because I think I would have made it my entire personality. I think I would absolutely been insufferable as, like, a middle schooler having seen these movies. Like, just probably would have altered my brain chemistry.
You know what, though? The people who get super obsessed with things as middle schoolers are the more interesting people as adults.
Oh, great.
That's my opinion.
I have a whole laundry list of things as a middle schooler that I was obsessed with. So
amazing.
Anyway, so yes, that was 2022, and we together have seen it two or three times. We wanted to watch it again when it came to IMAX this
year. Yes. Did you see it?
We missed out. We did not schedule it in, so I'm actually super upset.
That's so sad.
I did see that Michael B. Jordan ended up missing it as well. He missed the window, but he just rented out an IMAX theater to see it.
The things you can do when you're rich.
Yeah, I was like, why did I not think about that?
Seriously.
Michael B. Jordan, famous anime fan. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is he really?
Yeah, it's like a thing.
Cool. Oh, I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, he directed Creed 3, which I think is the second best Creed. And like, he said that a lot of the fighting in it, he was inspired by anime.
That,
and I'm like,
makes
you know what?
So much sense.
You can tell, and it's actually pretty awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah. Justin, when did you first see this movie?
I watched it yesterday on a Sunday afternoon. Yeah. By myself, just chilling in the old apartment. Me and Crosby. Crosby was into this movie.
Was he English
cream retriever?
Wait, really?
Yeah, he like would look up at the screen multiple times and was just like, "What's going on up there? I see some animals, but they don't look like animals I normally see out in the wild. So I'm not sure what this is."
Was he channeling his inner wolf? You think?
Yeah,
Crosby looks
probably
like a less badass version of her wolf because he's white with long shaggy hair and he's big.
Yeah, he's white. I'll show you. Ooh. Picture later. Crosby, he's less pointy than the wolves and less scary looking. He just has big black eyes. It's like, ooh.
Crosby, also known as Gooby, also known as Big Goob, also known as the Goobmeister.
Yeah. It's a 50-50 split on whether Abby and I call him Crosby versus Gooby because he's just a goober.
He is.
Just look at him.
I watched this in October 2021 at my friend Jake Nordman's house. Jake loves this movie. It's one of his favorites. He's like, you need to see this movie. And I watched it and I was like, yeah, it's pretty awesome. And then I rewatched it on a flight to Montana about a week ago. And I was like, oh, yeah, yup. It holds up and it was better. And I really liked it the first time and it was better the second time because I think I just knew kind of what to expect, and then I just like let it wash over me and I was like, oh yeah, this thing rules. It's so good. So what feelings other than entertained did you feel while watching this movie?
Yeah, so right off the bat, stunned. because we watched all these like very soft Studio Ghibli movies and knew them to be like, oh, they're the ones who do like My Neighbor Totoro. And then immediately in the first few minutes, you start seeing like heads and arms blasted off by arrows. And we're like,
yep.
Which actually was so fun. We're like, okay, we're seated for this. It's not
I'm sat for sure.
Yes. But the predominant feeling I felt while watching it for the first time was awe. Like, just this overwhelming sense of awe. You've got like the sweeping score and like the landscape, like the immersive world building, like everything about it just had me feeling this sense of awe. And like, you also feel this sense of like history and ancient lore in it too, with like the forest spirits and the gods. And I just like the mysticism also just like tapped into this, I don't know, otherworldly feeling for me. So that's big for sure.
For sure. Justin, how are you feeling?
I have a mixture of feelings, and I was...
This man gives this thing a 3.5 stars on Letterboxd. I texted him
right away.
Yeah,
did your soul drop out of your body when you saw that, Victoria? Were you like, what?
I was actually avoiding looking at it.
I said, Justin, I'm going to rip you a new one on this podcast.
Yeah, he texted me. Nick texted me verbatim and said, you doing drugs, son?
I said, Victoria and I will be ganging up on you about this.
That's totally fine.
This is the wrong opinion to have.
Back to the parking lot.
Yeah, after this and be like, you better think about what you've done. I was actually talking with Nick before the pod, and I was like, this is going to benefit from a rewatch for me because I think there's just a lot happening. So sometimes I was just like, what's going on? It felt long, but I think that's because I was just like so thrown back by like the story and how intricate it got and stuff. So I was like, what? I don't know. So anyways, I think I did feel intrigued and like pretty interested in the world and how it looked. So I'll say that. I just think sometimes I did feel a little like it was drawn out. I'll play the bad guy today.
Justin's the heel.
Yeah, like
actually, don't.
Yeah, and towards the end, I was like, are we gonna wrap this up or like what's going on here, guys? Like, I don't know.
I said awe. I love that you use the word awe because I also wrote that down because that is how I feel in taking in the visuals. It's so lovely. And there's like a tiny part of the movie, like 10 or 20% that's like benefits from computer like animated like CGI. But most of it is hand drawn, like just thousands of hand drawn pictures. And
which is just nuts.
It is nuts. And it's you can just see the beauty in that, in the nature. I said melancholy, frustration, and then amen. And the reason I put amen is because I just found myself, like, for this movie, for the what's true question, like, all of it. Like, this is just truth. This movie, the way that it approaches humans and the environment and their interactions, it does a better job than probably any movie I can think of. Personally, of just like evoking truth in that. So I found myself just kind of nodding my head with this one. So jumping into that question, what to you? And this one we just kind of like break up in a way where we just, you can jump in whenever, but like it's a broad question, but what to you resonates as true in this movie? It can be literally, spiritually, literally anything.
Yeah, Nick, to your point about the like environmental message, I think a lot of people tend to view Princess Mononoke through an environmental lens, and I think that's probably a really intentional message on Miyazaki's part as he was crafting this story. But what I find true most about the story and what interests me the most about it is what it says about conflict and hatred and the pursuit of peace. I feel like Ashitaka's character is like probably a fellow Enneagram 9, such as myself.
Dude, yeah. Oh, you're 9?
Yeah, wing.
Oh.
So like I like a little bit of
I love that.
Pushing back, but I also am like, but I actually want peace, you know?
I'm like, a 9 wing 1, so I don't get the whole like...
High fives.
Yeah, I don't get the whole like having some aspect of you that wants to like get down and dirty. But but I do, I was thinking about that. I was like, yeah, I feel closely with him in that sense where it's like, guys, just like everyone chill. It's
you
fine.
You two are both very peaceful people.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm also very interested in conflict. Like, that is an area of mine. So, like, watching this movie really resonates with me because seeing his character navigate the like, different parties who are involved in this conflict and, like, his personal wrestling with hatred and, like, the way that he is kind of like a violent character sometimes when he has to be, but like overall his purpose, at least in his words, is like to see with the eyes unclouded by hate. Like I love that line. It's kind of like the thesis of his character. So you're seeing him like most of the time trying to keep peace, most of the time trying to like disarm evil while not destroying the other, you know? And I just, that really just speaks to me.
That's really lovely. I love the idea of fighting evil without destroying people, which is hard to do for sure.
One of mine I said was humans are the worst. And like Ashitaka is, yes, like I resonate with him, but also he's like one of the only, maybe the only human character that I'm like, yeah, you're like, you're pretty cool. Everyone else, like they have some bad moments. So I don't vibe with a lot of the other characters, specifically like the main lead, like it's hard to remember some of their names. Jacobo. I don't like Jacobo that much.
Yeah, he sucks.
And Lady Eboshi or
She's complicated for
sure. She is complicated. The wise woman seemed cool.
Yeah.
Seemed pretty
at
cool
at the very beginning.
The 5 seconds she got. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I'm grasping for some people other than Ashitaka like that are fine. But I'm like watching this. I'm like, yeah, this is how humans act. That's for sure.
For sure.
Wait. So how do you feel about San then? Because she's not human, right?
Yeah. Exactly. No, yeah. She's a wolf. I don't have to answer that question.
Justin's like, she is wolf. There's nothing human. No, low key,
when she was like talking like that, I was like, wait, is she like not human? Then I was like, oh, she is. She just doesn't think she is.
Yes.
Got it.
I said uncontrollable doom, a sense of just like, so I've talked about this before with Justin on the podcast. Like I'm a big person who has dreams about like teeth falling out and things like that. Mm. And just like, you're screwed and there's nothing you can do about it. Mm. Like that's a feeling I resonate with my particular anxiety. And so this movie, when he gets his arm cursed and then the wise woman in his tribe is just like, you're screwed. This is going to kill you. Mm. And he's like, oh,
that
man.
That is a sucky feeling.
Yeah. And it's like, and his arm just keeps like pulsating. You're like, oh man. Mm. Yep. You're screwed. Sorry, man. You're done. I said like the arrows lopping off arms and limbs is just cool. That resonated to me as cool.
Not as true, just cool.
Yeah. Not as true in the sense of...
Nick's watching that, just like, that's pretty cool.
I think you're going to need some pretty special arrows to lop people's arms off.
Yeah.
But I actually kind of forgot how violent it is at times. I was like, oh my gosh.
Pretty awesome.
The hunter's wearing the skin of the boar's children.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Nago's children, where he's like, my children, you've come back to me. And then they're just like hiding under there.
Yeah.
So
they
gross.
Also look really creepy because their eyes are out.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's just so sad, like when it hits him.
Yeah.
For sure. I said industrial powers that destroy the world, ruin it for everyone, in the sense of like Ashitaka's tribe is not harming the world nearly as much as like Irontown is, but everybody is just reaping the consequences. And I think that that is just kind of how it's just the place we find ourselves in, like the nations, the U.S. included, that just like have really poor environmental care. Are destroying the one world that we all have. And that, like when the boar comes in and he's cursed and all of this stuff, I was like, oh man, that just sucks. Like it's ruining it for people who have not nothing to do with it, but who are very far removed. And like a lot of times the effects of climate change affect people who don't have as much to do with like the whole situation. So
kind of going off that, I was thinking through, like, it would have been really easy for Miyazaki to be like, okay, here are these talking animals and these spirits, and when the humans settled here, they started to destroy everything, and we tried to stop them, and they started killing us. So then, like, creating this narrative where the forest creatures are the good guys and the humans are the bad guys. So I just think something that's really interesting about it, and, like, what a lot of people find very nuanced about it, is just the fact that the movie does such a good job humanizing each and every one of them. Like, it humanizes them first and takes you through all of their perspectives before it, like, jumps into the action. And I think that's something that not a lot of movies make a priority, I feel like.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
true.
I think a worse movie would have like a moment where Lady Eboshi sings a song about hating the environment and wanting loving pollution and wanting to drown ducks in oil or something. And this movie doesn't do that. No. And I think that makes it so much better.
No. She literally employs like prostitutes and lepers and is trying to build a safe haven for people who are being attacked by the samurai.
Yes. And that part is like when you see the women that she's like pulled from brothels working and like they may not like love like that work does not look fun, but like it's probably a lot better than a brothel. And also they like seem happy, like they have camaraderie and like she's caring for the lepers. And it really reminded me of like how a lot of times industry uses money or whatever for things that are good. And personally, I thought of like, and I'm not comparing these two in a one-to-one way, but like, so I'm in public education and like Eli Lilly, like that company does lots of grants and donations and things like that, that actually help like a lot of public schools. But I'm like, personally, I'd like to live in a world where we could have public funding of these things and not have to rely on giant corporations. And in a similar way in this movie, I'm like, I would love for these women not to have to work in a brothel, but not to make guns to and like iron to like destroy the environment. So I don't know. It was just like a little parallel there where it's like thinking about the world that I want to see and thinking of the world as it actually is. And I think this movie really puts that into perspective in an interesting way.
Totally.
Yeah. When I was reflecting on this movie, I thought about Nope and how and the fact that they want to take the head from the forest spirit. Right.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And the whole idea in Nope of wanting to record and use this alien thing for their own purposes. And they're like, this is awesome. We got to like monetize this, basically. Uh-huh. And that's like kind of the same route they're going with the head. They don't need this head. They're just like, this is sweet and we can take it and conquer this thing. We're going to take this for ourselves.
And allegedly get eternal life.
Yeah. Yeah. Allegedly.
Right. So I was just like, that feels true to me. Like people are going to see this and just go that route with it instead of, you know, just leaving it alone.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also said openness to suffering. That there's the part where Ashitaka is carrying San through Iron Town after she like attacks them and he gets like shot through the chest. But he's, like, still carrying her, and, like, he disarms Eboshi, and he's just, like, walking out. He's like, I'm getting out of here. And that, like, he's doing all he can to not destroy people, and he himself is taking a lot of damage and harm and pain.
Beating.
And I think, yeah, and I think that's really beautiful. Just a really beautiful picture of just self-sacrifice, and a lot of times the best thing we can do is to not try and destroy, but to, to just try and save and help, even if that puts us in harm's way, which is obviously a lot easier said than done. Mm-hmm.
This is skipping ahead to questions, but why doesn't he die?
That's a great question. Victoria, you know the answer. Why doesn't he die?
I kind of feel like the arm curse thing also makes him like cracked with power, but I don't actually know that. To be factual.
That's what I assumed, because then he lifts up the gate that the guy's like, you can't do this. It takes 10 men to do this, and then he does it.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, he gets shot through, like, the left side of the chest. I'm like, that is...
Like, right through the heart.
Your heart. Yep.
Yeah. He's right. Like, try again.
Totally. Yeah, Man of Steel. I saw a YouTube clip where I was like, Man of Steel, Ashitaka, and it was just that scene where he gets shot through the chest.
Yeah, I love it. That's like my one explanation. It's magic. It's mythology, Justin.
Yeah.
Come on, Justin. I said riding an elk is so cool.
So cool.
It's just
that
cool.
Thing is so
yeah,
dope.
Cool. The
yeah,
elk.
Cool.
He's so dope.
And he's such a good friend, too.
He's such a good friend.
He like, doesn't want to leave him.
I know.
He's a real one.
Even when he's hit with an arrow.
I know. Yeah, my dog would be like running the opposite direction.
Yeah, everyone would be like, he would run away.
For sure. I also, I said, so Justin, you know how the forest spirit turns into the Nightwalker and he's like giant and like watery. Doesn't he look like the Chaos character from Sonic?
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
I just thought about that.
I think I was watching it and it did look familiar and I didn't know why it looked familiar to me, but that makes sense.
Justin and I were both very into Sonic the Hedgehog growing up. Oh, yeah.
Sonic was our guy.
He was. Justin.
We would play Sonic. Like, we would. Like, Nick would imagine he's Sonic and I'm Tails and we'd go around.
Play as in real life.
Yeah, almost like almost like
just the video game.
Yeah, almost like LARPing, but we didn't have like costumes and
no,
stuff.
No, I love that so much.
Justin actually did have a Sonic the Hedgehog costume, and one time I peed in it.
Yeah, that was a bad move.
It was an accident, and I was not very old.
We were 17, and Nick got drunk. I'm just
No. Anything else true to you?
The animation just takes me back. Mm. Like, 1997 is when this was made, and that style of animation and how it looks is like, ooh, yeah, late 90s, early 2000s. This is my childhood, the way this looks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Slightly grainy feel in some way.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh, it's so good. Yeah, I definitely, again, going back to the awe, even just the small things, like the little gestures and... I don't know. It doesn't feel like there's anything in the whole movie that's copy-paste. Maybe that there is, but like every frame feels unique and every frame feels like you could pause it and just put it up on the wall.
Well, in watching this movie, there are so many things that are creative choices that wouldn't necessarily need to be there, but they enrich it. So like, for example, like riding an elk instead of a horse. Mm-hmm. That's way cooler.
So cool.
I like, cool, I think more because... Yeah, he is what he is.
Totally. Well, and even like the way things look. So like his sword has like a flat edge on the tip instead of like a point. Mm-hmm. Ashitaka's sword, it's like almost like a rectangle sort of thing.
I wonder
and
if
like,
there's a name for that weapon. Like,
I don't know.
A Japanese weapon, or is it just like bespoke to this movie?
I don't know if it is or not, but that's a really great question because I looked at it and I was like, this is a creative choice, but that could be the case too. Yeah, I don't know, just little things in it of just how the movie looks and the creative choices that they made. I don't know. I just think it's amazing. Also, just like the forest spirit looking all creepy weird with his human-like face.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Creepy.
It is super creepy. And that's another thing I like about the movie, too, is that it doesn't say like, oh, nature is just perfect and great. It's like nature is pretty crazy. And like, I don't know that the forest spirit is like, I don't think he's like a villain, but I'm unconvinced that he's 100% good. He's there.
Oh, yeah. It really struck me watching him come down for the first time and he's walking on the surface of the water. And again, I'm feeling that awe again. But like his breath both brings things to life and then it's also killing things. And like that really is nature. Like he's not just, he's the good guy, which means he makes flowers appear everywhere. Like he's snatching souls out of people's bodies.
Yeah. Like if I saw him in the forest, I'd run the other way. I'd be like, I'm not hanging out with
his face looks like, or their face, whatever gender they are, looks like something I'd see in my dreams. Like just something random my mind would conjure up and like something scary. Like, oh, I don't want to look at that.
Those vacant eyes.
Yeah.
And it's like smiling, but is it happy? You don't know.
Yeah. Why are you happy?
Yeah, it's real creepy.
Well, yeah, to your point, Nick, about that. I mean, nature and just this like circle of life, things die out in nature. If you're not getting killed, like other things can't survive. So it's just how things happen.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know. I was just around a lot of nature. In Montana visiting my sister, and it's like nature is beautiful, but also it's like in Yellowstone they're always like, don't get close to the buffalo, they look nice but tourists get killed. And I'm like, well, yeah, don't go pet a freaking buffalo. But like, I don't know, like I'm not gonna, I don't know, it's like nature is beautiful but it does not care about humans. And it I mean, a lot of times it doesn't care about like that. Nature has no concept of nature. Nature's not like, we need to protect
nature.
Right,
or like human morality. Like animals don't share all of that with us.
Right. And I think the animals in the movie don't either, which I think is really cool. Even the ones who talk and are anthropomorphized are still very much animals.
Yeah, there's that one scene with the apes. Like, they're in the wasteland. Like, can we eat them?
Yep. Yeah, can we eat them?
And Sana acts like it's a mild inconvenience that they just suggested that. She's like, guys, cut it out. You know?
Yeah. No, you may not eat him.
He looks yummy.
You know, that actually is such a freaky scene. It's, like, so short.
What is there a name for the main big wolf?
Yeah.
Do we know? What's the name?
Moro, right?
Mm-hmm. Moro. Okay. Yeah. At one point, Moro is talking to Ashitaka and he's like, oh, you think like a human. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah. That's a bar.
Anything else for you guys?
Let's see. I would say another thing that I just find really true, again, going back to Ashitaka's character, is the burden that he feels as being the peacemaker, as the one who's fighting for peace. Mm-hmm. And again, as somebody who's like interested in that, you do have to take on just this reality that if you are like mediating more than one side, there's going to be people who hate you for it because you aren't unequivocally agreeing with them. And what a difficult spot that is to be, and how unseen that can make you feel by carrying that burden of even being the one who's having to like bridge the gap.
You can speak to this to whatever level you want or not want to, but how has that looked in your life before? Because I get the sense that that's a thing that you've been a part of. And you don't have to get into specifics. You also don't even need to answer it. You can just be like,
yeah, just shut up, Nick. Quit prying her personal life.
No, I think, when it comes to interpersonal conflict, I'm not quite as interested in like conflict between individuals. I just think right now, especially in this like current cultural moment, I'm very interested in like group conflict. Conflict like that we've seen have more peaceful resolutions, like the things in Ireland or like things like that, I think are an interest area of mine at the moment, but things that I try to apply to personal situations. So
sure.
Walking people in my personal life through that, using the principles from group conflict resolution, I think is interesting. I'm really into a poet, Padraig O Tuama, you might have heard of.
Oh, him. Yeah, I think I know. I think I have heard of that person. I think there's someone in my life who likes that person a lot.
Yes, Baleen Isabel.
Yes, Isabel likes. Yes, that is the person. I didn't want to just hear the first like Irish name and be like, yeah, that's the guy that she likes. I think that's
it. Yeah, so he talks a lot about that and does a lot of storytelling around that to like, I don't know. I think that peacekeeping requires a level of imagination to be able to see outside of like the boxes of violence or the boxes of conflict that people have already labeled themselves in and put themselves in. So like, I feel like to think of a resolution that doesn't require violence and that doesn't require destruction of the other requires a level of imagination that I think is something that Padraig O Tuama talks a lot about in his podcast and his poetry.
For sure. And it's hard, I think, in that, in like a macro sense too, because it's like, there's oftentimes like if you're going to try to get an actual peaceful solution, the violence actually needs to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard, I don't know, just because of the cyclical nature of it. And also, I mean, you have like power and giant militaries and all of these other things that are just like structural forces that makes that really
hard. And you have people
hard.
Who weaponize the idea of forgiveness to also justify their poor behavior. So like people who are genuinely seeking forgiveness and reconciliation versus people who are just trying to wield it as a way to keep people down.
Yeah.
Oh, because, you guys are like doing the same thing to us.
Yeah.
So I love that Ashitaka is able to fight for peace while also not playing this like very neutral both sides-ism, because when he sees something destructive happening, he calls it out. And he's honest with all the people in the movie about that, which I really respect.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah. I thinking about this and keeping the Enneagram 9 in perspective, it is hard to be in that situation too. And I'm not saying he's an Enneagram 9. I think there's just similarities there, but it's hard when you're like, just thinking personally, being in those situations where you have to be a mediator between two sides, and you almost have to not care what, like you said, what one side is thinking or both sides, because they may not like you because you're not unequivocally agreeing with them.
Yeah.
So they're going to dislike you for that. And you just have to push through that, which for 9 is tough because I want to feel accepted and comfortable and liked by people around me. But if you're playing Mediator, you have to throw some of that out the window. So
yeah, and people meet people where they're at. Another thing I love about Ashitaka is that he sees this rage that San has and like mm-hmm. very much validates it.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the movie, she's like, actually, I still hate humans and I don't think I can forgive them. And he's like, all right, then I'm going to continue helping Iron Town and I'll visit you in the forest.
Yeah, he's so chill about it.
Yeah, he just hears that and like doesn't like cast judgment upon her for that. No. He's like, you know what? You need some time and that's fair.
He probably has some understanding. Like, you've grown up in the forest and have not been around humans. So that's kind of honestly fair.
Yeah. I also think he gets where she's coming from because he's part of this tribe that is not as like they talk about at the beginning of the movie, the Emperor having pushed and like destroyed a lot of these tribes. And I think there's definitely like a U.S. parallel there. I don't know whether or not it's intentional. But he I think he can understand some of that as well. Not that he is obviously like part of like human society in a way that and has been his whole life more than San has. But
yeah, and there's even that scene where he like his arm is pulsating and twisting and he's like reaching for his sword because he like Lady Boshi says something where he's like ready to strike her down, but he's like, I'm gonna fight against that. So he even has his own personal feelings and opinions about it and this personal stake where he's got the bullet lodged in the boar and that cast the curse on him and everything. So he even has his own stakes, and the man's about to die at any time. And he's like, I have to choose to not destroy you because, like what you said, Nick, like it's going to be cyclical, and I have to keep my own feelings in check about it, too.
Yeah, it's intense, for sure. Is there anything that this movie puts forth that you don't like or don't agree with? Because for this one, I had nothing. I was like, I don't know. I just really vibe with the whole thing. But anything that you're like, this is not resonate is true to me. This feels like something I'm not into.
I really didn't have much for that. No.
Then why the rating?
Yeah, what the heck, Justin? Justin's like, this was justify just a bland, inoffensive movie. Super boring.
Yeah.
Run of the mill.
Honestly, the first thought I put on here on feelings was bored.
What there the was some, heck, Justin?
There were some moments where I was bored watching this. And
at what point were you bored?
Somewhere starting intermittently about halfway through the movie, and then the last 20 to 30 minutes started to pick up some, and I was like, yeah, okay. We're getting there. I guess if I'm going to explain my thought process with this, it's I liked it, and everything that it's talking about and we're talking about and we're going through here, I resonate with actually really deeply, but it's something about how I consume this, because like content can be about something, but like it is art, so everyone experiences it differently. So I think I just experienced it in a way that I was like, this isn't super hitting home. And then there's also the piece of there's a lot going on, there's a lot of different characters and things to think through as you're watching it, so that was tough for me. I'm honestly a slow processor, so it especially if there's like a dense movie, which I feel like this is a denser movie, it can be hard for me in one watch to be like, all right, got everything I need to know. And that impacted me super deeply. That is possible. But for this time, I think that's kind of where I'm coming from. So it's tough. I really enjoyed parts of it. And then also I was like, this didn't feel like afterwards. I didn't feel that sense of like, oh yeah, this movie. You know, that indescribable sense of after
satisfied,
watching. Yeah,
satiated.
Yeah,
sure.
So I truly, truly want to watch it again. Everything I read online, like people talking about it and now us talking about it, I'm like, yeah, no, that's true. I actually am like, that's great. So
that's one of the reasons I love talking to people about movies and doing this podcast and also just talking to people about movies in life is because sometimes a movie will not hit for me that hard, but then when someone tells me why they like it, I'm just like, oh, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, even if I don't love this thing, like, I can really appreciate it more, just understanding why it is powerful to someone else.
I truly believe, and it's different for everyone, but I truly believe there are some movies you need to watch two or three times to be like, okay, this is now really starting to get home for me. Hit home. Because the first time, like specifically with this movie, when I'm watching it, I'm so swept up in the story and what's going on that I think a lot of the nuance and underneath stuff I miss because I'm so swept up in that. So I miss all of that. And so I think that'll benefit from a second watch of just being able to know what's happening and then pay attention to a lot of the smaller things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. Who is the best Hang? Who is the worst Hang? Who is the best Hang of this movie? I'm really interested to hear your thoughts. Victoria, who do you think is the best Hang?
Okay, I know I just absolutely gassed up Ashitaka for this entire podcast, but he's not my best Hang.
Okay.
I would love to hang out with the lepers, I think, in the leper colony.
Ooh, okay. We don't get to see them.
No, yeah, not a ton.
No, I just feel like they're real chill, and the mm-hmm. few lines that they have are just such cold lines. They just have this wisdom, but also they're just hanging out. They
yeah.
have a great attitude, despite being lepers.
For
kind
sure.
of feel like I'd want to chill with them for a day.
Yeah, I love that.
That's
interesting.
Fun.
Justin?
That was not on my board whatsoever.
No, me neither.
I want to go hang out with the leper colony, actually.
Yeah. Victoria's like, you know, Jesus healed some lepers sometimes. He thought they were pretty cool, probably.
You hung out with lepers too.
I said, yeah, cool.
Yeah, I also said Yakul.
Excellent choice.
He's after, so awesome.
I think it was solidified choice. After Yakul gets shot with the arrow. And
oh,
he's
yeah.
just hobbling
he's
along.
Hobbling.
He's like, stay. And he's just like limping along with him. And he's like, okay, fine. Like, yeah. come with me. And I'm like, oh, Yakul.
Just such a loyal guy.
He's
know.
So cute also.
I know. That I agree 100%, Nick, when he's limping. And he's just like, no, stop. And it's like, oh, but he loves you.
Go on. Get out of here.
I know.
Yeah. He's so, oh.
Yeah, Yakul is my second place pick. For
okay.
Sure.
He's good. So sweet.
Yeah. I'm glad that the wolves didn't get to eat him. Because,
yeah,
Ashitaka
sure.
left him there.
Devastating, actually.
Yeah.
That would be a real quandary for this. If that happened in this movie, I'd be like, oh, man.
No.
I don't know.
Crossing the line.
I don't think I could have handled it.
The
heads flying, I could have done.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Those are fine.
Who's the worst Hang?
A lot of good options for this one.
Yeah. To me, I was like, there's a for sure worst Hang.
There's a number one draft pick.
Yeah. Number one?
Oh. Yeah.
I'm going to say the forest spirit.
The forest spirit's the worst Hang?
Okay.
Why?
Victoria's curveball answers. Let's
I know,
go.
I love it.
That I actually didn't think about until just now because I totally missed that question.
No, so that's fine. Like,
oh, fair.
Maybe the forest spirit, the creepy face,
yeah.
the unsettling, like,
it's
is
good.
My soul going to be snatched out of my body?
Mm-hmm.
Is he
going to
actually
true.
Heal me of all of my maladies?
I'd feel like I would be walking on eggshells around him all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that'd be a really unsettling experience. So, like, that awe that I feel is there, but not going to hang.
Like, don't piss him off.
They
look. Yeah.
Loki has the Gen Z stare, just like, what are you doing?
don't fart in the forest. He'll kill you.
Yeah. I said Jacobo.
Yeah, I said Jacob. Wow, Justin. Wow. We're on the same
page. We're on the same page.
Okay,
he
but
sucks.
I feel like when he's not being devious, he would actually be such a fun
No, he probably would be a little fun. I don't know if I vibe with him either. I'm like,
nah, when they're showing
you?
Eating rice together, I'm like, I liked him at first. Like, before you find out what he's up to, I was sitting
sure.
there like, I kind of want to hang out.
I kind of liked him too, but underneath, I was like, you seem a little interesting, dude. I don't know.
It's the Billy Bob Thornton of it all, where he is really good at being a scummy dude in movies.
I actually read that they wanted him to sound like a used car salesman.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's great.
Little peek of a fun fact.
For sure. No, that's... when he doesn't give the head back, I'm like, dude, just give it back.
Yeah,
give
the
head back.
Yeah.
It's like... You're. This is not helping you or anyone.
What's in the box?
Yeah, it's killing. It's killing everything. You just have to give it back, and he's like, "No."
Yeah, that was pretty insufferable.
Yeah, he sucks.
I also had a second place.
But I get what you're saying, though, Victoria, about the.
That's why he wasn't obvious to me. I'm like,
chilling
I kind of
would
have vibed with him at the beginning.
For sure, for sure. Well, then a second place option we can discuss is Gonza. The
Gonza.
Doofus guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like he never said anything good. He's always looked like a dummy.
But you
yes.
vibe with that.
Well, I vibe with the fact that I don't want to hang out with him. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. He wasn't on the same page. He was not a dominant guy.
No.
Do you have any movie-specific questions? Anything that you're wondering as you're watching this movie?
I almost brought this up earlier because we're kind of touching on it, but And as I mentioned, sometimes the underneath stuff I cannot catch, especially on a first watch. So do you think this movie has a good representation of like progress and like getting what we want at any cost? Like, because the forest and the things around them be damned, we're just going to keep doing the iron and,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, I think it's a realistic one. Personally, like, I think it, I don't know if it's a good or a bad one. I think it's a good one because it's realistic.
Yeah, I guess I'm more so asking if it's in the movie.
What is in the movie? Sorry.
If the movie is portraying that at all.
If it's asserting that it's okay.
Not that it's okay. Not. It's more so just trying to depict it in the movie. And yeah, that's an element. I don't know if that's an element of the movie or not. I guess is what I'm asking. I'm not saying if the movie's trying to say it's good or bad.
I think it just presents the tension. Like this tension that industrialization has with the natural world.
Mm. Okay.
What do you think, Victoria?
Yeah, I think that one of the ways that it captures that nuance is that I don't feel like it's super explicit that Lady Eboshi is being motivated by greed. Like, I feel like towards the end, you can kind of potentially posit that with their pursuit of the head. But also, you've got, like, Jacoba over here, like, threatening that the Emperor's going to do this or that to Irontown, like, on that download, being like, hey, you should do exactly what I say because I'm sent by the Emperor and there's going to be consequences if you don't. So I feel like there is this level of genuine care that she has for the people that she's protecting. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like there really is a moment. Like, she kind of tongue-in-cheek says she wants to take over the world, but, like, I don't actually see her as, like, a monetarily greedy person.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting, too. I feel like most of the time when I think that, I assume that the motivation is going to be wealth.
Yeah. I think she's more into power than wealth, but I think they come together a lot of the time.
Yeah. But she also uses that power for a lot of good.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
She girl bosses.
She does.
She girl bosses hard.
I said, you're in the forest. You're walking around. Are you trusting those little tree spirits, the little white ones with the heads that, like, do the little thing? Are you trusting them? Because there's a part where Ashitaka's walking and they're all, like, leading him somewhere and he follows them all. I'm like,
with their little butts.
Well, I love their little butts.
Yeah. Am I right? Those things are cheeked up.
They really are.
Butt cheeks.
They didn't need to have that detail on there. They added that.
It's a great little detail. Are you following them?
I think I'm doing what they do at first, like, yo, what are these things? Mm-hmm. And then once they seem kind of nice and Ashitaka tells them, oh, no, they're good, then I guess I'm like, all right, well, this guy knows. I'll follow.
I feel like if I were truly desperate, like we're lost in this enchanted forest and I'm running out of options, I would probably follow
them. That's very true.
Because at that point, it's like, what other options do I have?
If I just walked into the forest and they started walking that way, I'd be like,
absolutely not.
I think I'm leaving the forest now.
Yeah.
And
they're kind of like mimicking them a little bit. Like, you see the one carrying the other one in his back because he's carrying the wounded guy, and they're kind of like staring at him like, look, I'm just like you. I'm like, is that like devious? Or are you just having some fun?
I didn't notice that. It's funny.
Well, also a question about the forest spirits. Are they cute?
I think they're cute because of the butt cheeks.
Just the butt cheeks are
cute. If the butt cheeks were not there, I'd be like, eh, they're fine.
That's fair. Fine. Yeah, their face and how they look is kind of, they just look like Scream a little bit, except the eyes aren't as narrow.
They're cute in a really unsettling way, but I really resonate with that.
Also, one of my favorite, I sent this to Nick, one of my favorite Letterboxd reviews said, Nintendo really went and based the entirety of Breath of the Wild around this movie, huh?
Yep. Yep. That is so real. Have you played Breath of the Wild, Victoria?
Yes, and I'm going to jump ahead. That is what I was it with.
Oh, amazing.
That was my
that's a good pair it with.
Sitting down on an evening, just cranking through some Breath of the Wild.
I did that in COVID hard.
That was what got me through COVID, too.
Yeah.
I'm talking like 8-hour shifts on that thing.
That and Harry Potter, reading the books. Yeah.
I'm glad you did some reading. I did not do much reading during COVID. It was all Breath of the Wild.
Well, the blue tunic
still awesome
and everything.
I know. Like, I noticed that. I was like, that blue tunic looks familiar.
Is this the bloodiest R-rated movie that you've seen? Bloodiest non-R-rated movie. Is this the bloodiest non-R-rated movie?
I don't know if it's the bloodiest
movie,
but it's definitely the most decapitations and arms falling off. There's less blood than you'd think with that happening.
That's actually so true.
Sure.
The body count, though, I mean, what the boar is getting exploded, too. Like, if we're counting the animals in this movie, crazy body count in this
movie. Yeah, there's a... Yeah. Also, Ashitaka at one point catches an arrow.
Oh, yeah, that part's dope.
That's sick. Like,
again, he's just cracked with power.
Yep.
He is.
The only OP. Movie, the only non-R-rated movie I could think of that was close to as bloody is Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, when the guy rips the heart out of the other guy and it's still beating.
That was
which
intense.
Which is pretty, like, cartoony, but, like, pretty gross and bloody.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have one. The snake thing touched Princess Mononoke. Why didn't she get burned or whatever? When she's literally on the boar.
Oh, like the grubby things. That
and
are
all around her. And yeah. And Ashitaka gets touched for like 3 seconds. And it's like, oh, my arm, I'm cursed forever. And she's in there. And it's like, ah, whatever. Must be something to do with her growing up in the forest or something.
Maybe.
That's a good point. I wonder.
It's a good point.
The way he talks about the first boar that he encounters, was it Nago? Or is that the blind one?
I don't remember.
I think Nago's
names.
The first one, and I feel like he talks about like the boar cursed me. So maybe okay. I think it's Akodo. So it's, I think Akodo's the one that San is on top of when she's getting covered with the grubby things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there needs to be a level of intent.
Sure.
Because when the boar dies, he at the beginning of the movie, he tells them like, we're gonna like kill you, basically. Like where you're gonna get yours.
Oh yes, when the boar dies. Yep.
That is interesting. That's the intent thing is
that's my guess.
Right.
That's my theory.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Yeah. Glad we got to the bottom of that. Yeah, I was really confused by that. I was like, she's literally covered in these things.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Do you have any more questions, Nick?
I have like two more. I have how does Ashitaka do such a clean bun cut of his hair? When he cuts his hair, he's just like whoosh, and his hair falls perfectly.
He did the Mulan tutorial.
Yes, it's for real. Yes. That is so real. It is it is the Mulan tutorial. Well, that question answered. Is Jacobo the grossest animated character ever created? He's so disgusting looking.
Yeah.
He's so nasty.
He's so disgusting looking.
He's so gross.
No, he is.
Can you think of a grosser
nose.
One?
Wario,
maybe?
Well,
Shrek's
okay.
pretty gross.
I feel like, have you seen very many other Studio Ghibli movies, though?
I've seen Spirited Away, and I've seen Howl's Moving Castle.
The old lady in Spirited Away with her little green dudes actually are gross to me. Like,
she is creepy.
Hard to look at.
And how her head is like ginormous, that lady.
Yeah, and like you just like zoom in on her face and it almost looks like one of those like realistic SpongeBob paintings where she's like overly detailed with the wrinkles and the warts.
So disgusting.
And, like,
yep.
Yeah,
I haven't seen the movie, but I know what you're talking about with the SpongeBob thing.
Yeah, I feel like that's like actually hard for me to look at.
Yes. Do you have any more questions, Victoria?
I only had one. It was, were there any particular scenes that just really moved you? Which Justin, I'm going to guess, is a no because he was bored.
Justin's like, screw this movie. I hate it.
I was like, yeah, I fell asleep.
But was there anything that, like, I don't know, stirred up like some kind of emotion in you?
You go first, Nick, because I'm trying to scrape the barrel over here.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll say the very end gets me where it's like, I mean, the romance is not played up that much between the two, which I like, but...
Me too.
He obviously is infatuated with her because she's cool. Like, it's kind of hard not... You're going to be helpless if, like, this forest girl comes and just, like, kicks ass and then, like, is super cool and doesn't like you back. You're just going to kind of be obsessed with her.
Happens to be your age.
Yeah, right, for sure.
You've just
been
banished from your country.
Yup. So he, like... This whole thing of, like, they have this mutual respect for each other, it's not going to work out. There's not going to be much there. They're like, well, see each other sometimes. Like, I'm going to go back to Iron Town and you're going to keep fighting humans because you hate them. That just gets me. I don't know. Because that's just sometimes the case. Yeah.
That's how a lot of movies, especially with relationships, end and you like them. As in Drive.
What was just said? Wait, what?
Yeah, that didn't make any sense. I was trying to sputter through that. Cut that. A lot of movies you like tend to end that way, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Thief, Drive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the, I want to be with you, but this thing is keeping us apart, and it's the best thing to not be together.
Yep. Or like you can't.
Yeah,
or like
you can't.
You love someone... in a way that's different than what you might mm-hmm. want in an ideal situation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. None for me because this movie's boring. So.
What about you, Victoria?
Hate to hear it, Justin. The scene where they're in the middle of Iron Town and Lady Eboshi brings out the two women who lost their husbands to the wolves, mm-hmm. that's a moving moment to me. Because even though I'm like, I kind of hate that Iron Town is here and that they exist, I also want these people to be okay.
Yeah.
And then, like, seeing everybody, like, just openly talking about how deeply they've been suffering because of the existence of the other, to me is just like, I don't even know what the emotion is that I feel. I just, like, it just hits me hard.
Yeah. And when he's carrying her, that would be the other one for me,
mm-hmm.
is getting shot while carrying
her. Oh, yeah.
That's really lovely.
I also love the scene. I mean, this is the classic one that's like on all the Tumblr posts.
Tumblr posts? Oh, wow. Deep cuts.
But it's that moment where like she's about to slit his throat and like threatens to kill him. And he looks up and he's like, you're beautiful.
Yeah, I watched that on YouTube today. I was trying to look up some scenes again.
Yes.
And she was like, wasn't she thrown back by it?
Yeah, I'm like, goals, wow.
Yeah.
For real.
Oh, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but would you guys want a live-action remake of this?
No. I would be, I actually think, as much as like oftentimes the internet is a place where people feel entitled to their opinions in a way that's really annoying, I think the fan backlash would actually be so
bad. It'd be really bad.
There's
already a like Zendaya AI trailer for a live action remake, like a fan made thing.
Please no.
And literally all the comments were like, the way my heart dropped seeing this, I'm so glad this is fake, like in all caps.
Oh my gosh.
No, would actually boycott it.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
I will say though, I don't want it. I just looks kind of dope with the giant wolves and Zendaya. I was like, ooh, kind of cool, but I don't want it per se.
Justin's like, please.
Yeah, I'm one of those people who I think it's fun as a thought exercise to think, who would I cast if there were to be a live action?
Sure.
I think that's a fun little icebreaker type of moment, but I never actually want it.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure.
What about fun facts? You guys have any fun facts about this movie? Fun facts?
You alluded to one earlier that I would rather you take point on.
Oh,
so
why?
I'm going to skip to my second one.
Okay.
Which is, and maybe...
But feel free to take that other one, too. Like,
no. You should take it. You should take it, Nick. The other one that I was going to bring up. Oh, yeah. One thing that strikes me about all Studio Ghibli movies, not just this one, is how they aren't afraid to take their time and depict those small details. Like, the way a kid would struggle to put on their shoes, or the landscape scenes that just really don't have any dialogue or like plot movement, but that are just there to look pretty. So in Western storytelling, we often view each bit of dialogue or props as like a vehicle to communicate some kind of meaning to the audience. But I learned later that there's this Japanese concept called ma. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Okay.
Which is just letting the silence and the negative space speak for itself. So maybe, Justin, thinking about ma a little bit more would help you kind of appreciate those quote-unquote boring elements. Because I love that about it, actually. Like, I go to Studio Ghibli movies when I want that bit of mental space and breathing room, because I have now to come to like see that concept play out everywhere in his movies, and I crave it now.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that's really cool, because it is true that sometimes, and I really like movies that don't waste any space or time too. It's just kind of like bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
And not in a way that's fast paced, more so there's just not a lot of negative space like you're talking about. But That is cool, because you can still communicate, and it's just more subtle.
I think that probably what you're saying about like the negative space and the just like letting it be in silence and things, I think maybe one of the reasons this is my favorite Ghibli movie that I've seen is that there is that plus some pretty crazy action and things, because like I really like Spirited Away as well, but there's like Spirited Away just feels like it happens. It does. That make sense?
It really does.
It happens and you're like,
it flows like a river, you might say.
It does flow like a river, and sometimes it flows right into some nasty creepy slug thing that dissolves. It's like a movie where you're like, whoa, I just feel like I just got a window into a really weird world, but I don't feel like I read a novel or something where it's just like, this happened, then this happened, this. It's just like, oh, whoa, that was an experience. Mm-hmm. And this movie has, I think, a little bit more story going on, mm-hmm. And character focus and things. Although there's definitely character focus in Spirited Away too. And I like Spirited Away, but I love that. I think something that I thought of when you said that is that there have been like studies done on the way that Eastern and Western viewers watch like movies and things like that. And there's a tendency, obviously this is broad strokes, a tendency for Western viewers to focus on like characters or a focal object. And then Eastern viewers' eyes like bounce around a lot more and look at like the whole, which I think is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And something I think about when I'm watching these movies, particularly like Studio Ghibli ones, because it's like, I don't know, there's just a lot going on in all of it. And I think watching it in a way where you can soak all that in is really beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I've heard about Eastern versus Western storytelling, and maybe somebody can fact check me on this later because I don't know this to actually be true. I'm just scrolling the web, is just this idea of like whether or not that there's a resolution and like a theme to take away at the end versus mm-hmm. just letting it be like sometimes humans suck.
Yep.
And like just mm-hmm. letting that breathe. And maybe there is a moment of grief or a moment of like suffering or loss that a character experiences, and there is no like happy bow at the end. It's just like that's what happens to them. And I feel like that is something that I've seen people be uncomfortable with this movie, is that there is no retribution that happens for the bad actors in it.
Yeah.
Like I've seen that be somebody's big gripe with it over and over again, where it's just like there is no vengeance. There is no like comeuppance at the end. And mm-hmm. I do think that is the point.
Yeah. Right.
And even if it's uncomfortable to sit in that because you want the bad guys to not get their way.
Such is life.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So this movie, okay, Miyazaki, have you like read interviews with him before? He's an interesting dude.
Yeah.
He has some interesting quotes about like the making of this movie. So he said, after making a few movies with Studio Ghibli, he said, "I begin to hear of Ghibli as sweet or healing, and I get an urge to destroy it." And like he said that about the making of this movie, which I think is really interesting, of just like this, everyone thinks my movies are so sweet and nice, mm-hmm. and like they are in a big way made for children. And he's like, even though that's, I don't even like saying that because it makes it sound reductive, because I think it's like the quality of this is so much higher than so many things that are made for children. But he's like this kind of like thorniness towards that of like, I don't just want to make a nice movie. I'm feeling sad about the world. Mm-hmm. And like the Yugoslav wars going on mm-hmm. Around the time of this getting made. And he was like very influenced by that. And like Howl's Moving Castle, he was very big on like the Iraq war with the U.S. and like critiquing that. So like He's always thinking about these things. He also had a quote that I thought was interesting when he said, "When I see tuna being hauled in on a line, I think, wow, humans are terrible. But when someone offers me tuna sashimi, I, of course, eat it and it tastes delicious." Mm. And I think that that's a really interesting quote because it's just like, yeah. I mean, especially thinking of my own life, I'm like, I eat meat. But I'm also like, I'm very uncomfy with the factory farming process, but I'm not uncomfy enough to not eat meat. But it's like, this is pretty unethical.
Right.
And
or if we're talking about
great.
Environmental devastation, I mean, what's one of the number one causes for climate change?
Mm-hmm. Vehicles.
Vehicles and meat eating.
And meat eating. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing, Nick. I tinkered with being vegan, and I wouldn't call myself anything like vegan or vegetarian, but I probably eat less meat than a lot of people. And it is something I think about sometimes where it's like, I'm not personally going to kill a chicken or a cow. I wouldn't feel comfortable with that, but I guess I'll eat it sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to like quantify and just put, I don't know. It's hard sometimes to think about.
Yeah. Another fun fact about this movie, it dethroned E.T. as the top box office grosser in Japan. So E.T. before this movie was like the highest Japanese, not Japanese movie, but highest grossing movie in Japan. Princess Mononoke took it, and then just a few months after, Titanic came and took that away.
Wow.
Neil Gaiman did work on the English script.
Yes.
So Neil Gaiman, have you read any Neil Gaiman?
I've not read him, but I've read about him.
Hasn't he been in the news lately for some accusations? I actually don't know
some
all the details.
Unsavory. Yeah, I don't know all the details
gross.
Either. But
speaking of gross details and unsavory things, Harvey Weinstein was a big part of this movie getting distributed in the U.S.
Yep.
He initially asked Quentin Tarantino to adapt the script, and Tarantino was like, no, this does not seem like my thing. And I'm very glad he passed because I think this movie would, I don't know. I like some Tarantino movies, but I'm also like, I don't think he makes this script better necessarily. Yeah. Anything else? Fun facts
wise?
Yeah,
you didn't actually take on the fun fact that I thought. That
okay, I don't remember.
This is the one that I hear all the time, so I kind of figured that all of us would bring it. Maybe.
Okay, no.
I don't know if you had
it
in mind,
I don't know.
But I've heard that when it was time to distribute the movie in the U.S., the Weinstein Group, wanted to take a ton of cuts to the movie so that it would appeal to more Western audiences and attention spans, perhaps. And I hear that Hayao Miyazaki sent him a katana with a note that said, no cuts. And sure enough, it was released in its entirety.
Yep.
And pretty dope.
Weinstein.
I read that, yeah.
Was like, once this is released a little bit in the U.S., like to like select screenings and stuff, people are going to hate it and then we're going to cut it. And then he did not cut it, thankfully.
Wow.
But
F
yeah.
him.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. Like, it's uncool. Uncool guy. You know what? I'm going to be brave. I'm going to say on mic, I don't like Harvey Weinstein. I think he's a bad guy. I think he did some bad things.
Really went out on a limb there, Nick.
I know.
Yeah, that's, you're going to get some flack for that.
Hey, sometimes you just got to...
Did you guys see that he, I'm going to say his name right, Miyazaki?
Yeah, Miyazaki.
Personally corrected or redrew more than 80,000 of the film's 144,000 animation cells.
That's crazy.
Dude did not spend time with his family.
Yes, I have read about that.
Canonically did not spend time with his
family. You're like, that tracks.
He's one of those artists who makes some really amazing things, and I think his personal life has probably suffered a bit from it.
Yeah, he is such a character.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know what, well, I kind of know what it is, but it's cool, and I don't appreciate it enough, I guess, but it's the last major animated motion picture to be filmed on plastic animation cells.
Plastic cells. Interesting.
Yeah. So,
I
don't know. That's why I don't know enough about it. I just saw that and thought it was...
Catch me looking up animation cells, plastic versus...
Here's what I think it means, and this is probably wrong, but what I think plastic animation cells are where you have, like, an animation frame, and then you move to the next one, but the outline, like, you basically superimpose on things so that it's not like, let me make the exact same drawing every time. It's like you have a lot of carryover, and then you tweak it to make it move.
I think the animators call that onion skinning, but I'm not 100% sure about that. I'm like starting to dabble.
Very cool.
Now this is going to get me down a rabbit hole after this, or I'm going to want to find out what that means, Justin.
Yeah.
Well, sure. I just did a quick Google, and this doesn't explain anything about plastic animation cells, but I mean, those are physical, and then after that point, it went to digital. So they're like drawing these things.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was all computerized, basically.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And I think this movie was coming out right around the time that like Toy Story was coming out. So you have this big jump in like computer animated stuff.
Yeah. It's crazy how long that stuff takes. I mean, I love The Wind Rises. That's one of my other favorites.
Have not seen that one.
I really, really love it. If you thought this one was boring, Justin, you will absolutely think that this one is boring. It is even slower and has even more ma in the whole movie.
Yeah.
But there is a scene where there is a crowd that's like pushing and shoving, and there's the main characters are trying to make their way through. And I have read that hand drawing that scene alone took 2 years of their time, and it is probably like less than 10 seconds.
That's crazy.
That is wild.
But Hayao Miyazaki's just one of those guys. He's like, we're going to get this right. We're going to get it perfect. And it's just going to be this feat of animation. And if people only see it for 10 seconds, I will put my head on the pillow at night knowing that we did that.
Sounds like a great guy to work for. Great boss.
Those folks are not sleeping.
What should you pair this movie with? Victoria, you alluded to this earlier. I think that's a really good answer. What should you pair it with?
Breath of the Wild.
Amazing. Amazing. Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom?
I have not played Tears of the Kingdom yet.
Oh, Tears of the Kingdom is very fun. It's basically just more of the same, but there's just more to do.
Yeah.
More to do.
I'm waiting on Brayden. Listeners, Brayden is my husband.
Yes.
I'm waiting for him to fully wrap up Breath of the Wild because I know he's going to want to watch me play Tears of the Kingdom, and I would love for him to just experience it at the same time as me and not have spoilers and stuff. So.
Does he like watching? Like, do you guys watch each other game?
We do watch each other game.
That's fun.
I love that. Yeah. That's so sweet.
Yeah, so for Tears of the Kingdom, I will get dibs because I've been finished with Breath of the Wild for so long, and I love Nintendo, so we're going to be doing that.
Yeah.
And right now I'm watching him play Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, wow. Intense.
Okay.
Yeah, I love
this
it.
Is so funny because I listened to a different podcast and they were talking about Red Dead Redemption and the guys were giving this one guy such shit about it because they were like, they're not gamers per se either, I'd say, except for maybe the other guy who's not even like a huge, huge gamer, but he definitely plays video games and he's talking about Red Dead Redemption and he was talking about basically on the game like, oh yeah, like towards once you get to the end and you're done, like you can like do chores and stuff and like live your life. And they're like, so you just get on a video game and do chores? Like what the fuck? Like why are you doing that?
Okay, but I love the game Stardew Valley, if you're familiar.
Oh my
and
gosh.
That really is just sitting and doing chores. And
Hannah
Brandon
plays
used to
that.
Roast me about that. He's like, why are you getting on there and doing chores? I'm like, just try it. The next day, I hear him shouting from the other room going, I need to get Maru her strawberries now!
That's incredible.
That is so real. That is exactly how I feel about those games. Like Stardew Valley, Hannah played a lot of. Hannah also played Animal Crossing for a bit. And I'm like, I don't want to go on a game and manage things and like have to do work in a game. I do that in real life and it's stressful sometimes.
Yeah, yeah I thought that about myself and then I tried it.
Yeah, maybe I gotta try it. Just to suck down that Animal Crossing rabbit hole.
My roommate was big Stardew Valley and I don't know if you ever played Animal Crossing, but big Stardew Valley guy.
I will say, to give Animal Crossing some credit, they're cute. Those little guys,
cute.
They're cute.
They're selling merch.
The rhino with the strawberry horn, she's adorable.
I have a funny story about Stardew Valley that's
let's hear it.
Not going to make it into the podcast, probably.
No, let's hear it.
My coworker at my last job would hear me talk about it. And if you're familiar with the game, you know that you can date NPCs, date and marry them.
Yes.
And I was talking about how Brayden was helping me pick out who I was going to date in the game. And she thought that this game was online.
Oh my gosh.
And that for weeks she thought that Brayden was helping me deliberate over who online I would be dating in this game.
Amazing.
For weeks she thought that about me. And then there was something that she alluded to later on where I was like, you know that like, they're not real people, right?
Yeah, they're computers.
Like, programmed. And she was like, Victoria, I just didn't want to yuck your yums.
Wow, way to not judge your friend.
What a nice friend.
She was alarmed for sure.
Yeah, her antennas were up.
Yes.
She's like, tell me more.
Yeah.
I said you should pair this movie with hanging out with your pet, if you have a pet. Victoria, what pets do you have? I know your pets. They're great.
I have two rabbits. One is a Holland Lop and one is a Lionhead Rex mix.
They're so cute.
Okay, well, I'll exchange so pet photos after this. I need to see your rabbits. That's
they're
awesome.
They're delightful. They're both black.
Yeah, they're so cute. I said, yeah, hanging out with your pet. So Ripley, like, I don't know. His little, oh my gosh, why am I blanking on the name? What's the deer's name?
Yakul.
Yakul just makes me want to hang out with my pet. I also said going to Montana because I watched this the second time on the way to Montana to see my sister who lives there. And we just saw lots of lovely nature there. It's so beautiful. We went to Yellowstone. I was so obsessed with like the hot springs. They're just so cool. And the bacteria makes them like turquoise. And then they have this weird runoff. And it's just like, it's like Mars, it looks like just clay. It's really cool. We saw lots of animals. We saw the bison. We saw some elk. We saw a bear from a distance, which was pretty cool.
Were any of them cursed?
I don't think so. Hopefully not. I didn't get close enough to tell, so I was not about to go get cursed by a buffalo.
Is Yakul a hybrid of animals? He looks, I saw this in a review, he looks like part elk, part...
He looks like a gazelle.
Yeah, part elk, part gazelle. Yeah.
I don't think he's real, Justin.
Well, I'm just asking for the purposes of the movie.
In the English dub, they call him a red elk, but yes. I also feel like that's not something that exists in the real world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said go for a hike.
Yeah.
In some cool forest.
Justin
forest.
Said go touch grass.
Yeah. Everyone touch grass.
Touch grass.
Get outside, everyone. Yeah.
Grass makes me itchy.
Oh. Come on.
I have a new... Okay. So this is a question that we haven't asked on the pod before, but Victoria, I'm interested on your answer. What is the reason for people to watch this movie? Like, what is the reason? If you had to give someone a pitch, like... to watch the movie Princess Mononoke, what would be like, this is why you should watch this?
Okay, I have a lot of, I know a lot of people who don't like animated movies or don't gravitate towards them.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for me, if you tell me about how good the animation is, I'm already seated.
For sure.
For the person who isn't always going to reach for that right off the bat, I would say just the immersiveness. Like, this world feels so lived in, the mythology, again, the awe that I feel when the gods come down and do their thing, and the spirituality, like, the Japanese spirituality is so fascinating.
Yeah.
And the score is incredible. Like, I don't even feel like we've touched on that enough.
Not at all.
You're sitting there, and I listened to it on the way here again, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, like, even just listening to it has got me feeling some type of way.
The piano score at the very end where they gave the head back and it's like San and Ashitaka just talking. That time, you know what song I'm talking about?
I think
it's piano.
So.
It's very beautiful. And that part gets me. That might be why that was an emotional scene for me partially too, because the score is just popping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I was curious as to your answer. I think that might be a question that we ask guests.
For me, it's I will say if you want to watch a convoluted and boring movie, this is a movie for you.
Shut up, Justin.
Love being the mean guy today. It's fun.
You're bad cop today.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Do we have any quotes? Any quotes from this movie?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
For
let's
sure.
Let's do some quote tennis. We'll start with you, Victoria. And we can go this way.
Okay, question.
Usually, yeah.
Does it have to be a quote from the movie, or can it also be from Hayao Miyazaki, or quotes that I find adjacent to the themes of this movie?
Heck yeah.
I say just
you
go
can
for
do
it.
Do whatever you want.
Okay.
I feel like they're going to be good.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, I'll go
if
ahead
it's
and...
it's not from the movie, tell us where it's from.
Okay. You know what? I'll go ahead and start with the movie ones all that right. I got. In the English dub, I love when Toki, what the really sassy brothel girl, insults one of the men. I think it's that guard, that doofus guard that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
Justin, where she says,
Gonza.
Even if you were a woman, you'd still be an idiot.
That's
so good.
Typical selfish. You think like a human.
Ah, you're awake. I was hoping you'd cry out in your sleep. Then I would have bitten your head off to silence you.
I also have a Moro quote. Moro talking about raising San as her own after her parents abandoned her. She says, instead of eating her, I raised her as my own. Now my poor, ugly, beautiful daughter is neither human nor wolf. She's like, thanks, I guess?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. You forget she's a girl. It'll take more than that. I love that. Girl power.
You cannot change fate. However, you can rise to meet it if you so choose. I really love that.
That's a good one. Okay, this quote is from Hayao Miyazaki. It's one that I like because it speaks a little bit to what you were saying, Nick, about the relationship like between San and Ashitaka, where you kind of know it's doomed, but you're loving watching it unfold anyway.
Yeah.
Hayao Miyazaki says, I've become skeptical of the unwritten rule that just because a boy and a girl appear in the same feature, a romance must ensue. Rather, I want to portray a slightly different relationship, one where the two mutually inspire each other to live. If I'm able to, then perhaps I'll be closer to portraying a true expression of love.
Yeah, I love that. That is a true expression of love. This movie, I love that. That's amazing.
Okay. Victoria? I need to show this movie or tell Tucker Germain to watch this movie. We can cut his name out. Because he all the time in college would be like, I'm so annoyed that every single thing is like, oh, they get together and then they're together. It's like,
yeah.
So I'm like, dude, this is right up Tucker's alley.
That's amazing.
And I think he'd really appreciate the animation. So you say you're under a curse. So what? So is the whole world.
Oh, yeah, for real. Life is suffering. It's hard. The world is cursed, but still you find reasons to keep living.
That's one of the lepers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, it's a cult.
It's a leper. Yep.
That is.
You don't want to hang out with
right.
that?
Yeah, I mean, hey, you don't hang out with that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's all I got.
This is one from Common Prayer, A Liturgy for Ordinary Radicals.
Amazing.
If we've got fans in the room or out there on the web. This is about peacemaking. Peacemaking doesn't mean passivity. It is the act of interrupting injustice without mirroring injustice. The act of disarming evil without destroying the evildoer. The act of finding a third way that is neither fight nor flight, but the careful, arduous pursuit of reconciliation and justice. It is about a revolution of love that is big enough to set both the oppressed and oppressors free.
That is beautiful. I love the idea of disarming evil while not participating in it with violence, which is really, really
It's difficult. That difficult third way.
For sure. Mm.
Secret yeah. third option.
Yeah.
It's there.
Justin?
Ugh, I smell like a human.
That's actually so much deeper than mine.
Yeah.
I have a couple more. My husband's an idiot, but at least he's safe and sound. And cut off a wolf's head and it still has the power to bite.
Yeah. And it does, which that's is pretty actually, crazy.
Is that true?
Oh, no. No way. Like, no way
I
that's
like snakes
true.
Snakes do that, but like, I don't know about a wolf.
Ew, snakes? You know a snake could do that.
When the wolf falls off the mountain and is still alive, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, that's great.
This guy ain't messing around.
For sure. Yeah. Justin, you want to close us out?
Yeah, this was fun. Thanks for listening to Show Me the Movies and our discussion on Princess Mononoke. Email us at themoviesshowme@gmail.com with any questions or comments. And remember to follow us on Blue Sky and Instagram. We'll see you next time.
And always remember, are you selling soup or donkey piss?